IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Rohan Seth. I work in tech policy at the Takshashila Institution. I've got with myself Anupam, who is the resident in-house economist. And we today have a very interesting topic to discuss in antitrust. I think we are now Takshashila's resident antitrust experts. And we've had quite an interesting development here, Anupam, because the FTC in the US has decided to sue Facebook, and they're coming after Facebook with everything they've got. Political timing of it, I don't want to comment on because the content of this is quite interesting and I just want to keep the politics out of it. And so the FTC has basically alleged that Facebook holds monopoly power in the market for personal social networking services in the United States. And it enjoys that monopoly power through the control of the largest and most profitable social network in the world, known as Facebook Blue, or to the rest of the world, simply as Facebook. Right, so this is just an extremely interesting development for me, because to me, this sounds like there's a lot of antitrust suits for Facebook to deal with. I think if you ask a Facebook employee tomorrow, did you hear about the latest antitrust suit? They'd probably be like, which one? And to me, that's really something, because this is just the latest in a line of family-friendly podcast, but shitstorm. And I want to start with this thing called a market definition. We always talk about why a market definition is important to building an antitrust case. And there is basically this thumb rule that we follow, right, Anupam, which is that whoever's sort of accusing the monopoly tries to define the market as broadly as possible. And then the alleged monopolist will...
The other way around, bro. Yeah, sorry, no, yeah. The person who's accusing the monopoly will always define the market in as narrow terms as possible. So as to obviously try and prove dominance in the market, or at least monopoly power. Whereas the company defending would always define the market in the broadest terms possible, right? So, and this happens. I mean, we've discussed this multiple times before, so we won't get into it. But if you ask, if you ask the government regulators of what market Uber is in, they will say it's in public transport. But specifically, they will go on to say that it's in, app-based cab aggregators, right? So that's a very specific thing, which means there will just be about two competitors. Whereas if you ask Uber themselves, they will say we are in the broadest aspect of public transport, which means in some sense, a cycle which can carry another person is also Uber's rival. But that's extreme, but they would at least say metro or buses, etc., metro rail network or...
Basically mobility.
Yeah, anything which to do with mobility is there. So, I mean, for Uber, they, and we can discuss this, some other time, but for Uber, a person who has their own car is definitely its own rival. I mean, because if you have your own car, then you're not using Uber's services, and therefore it's a rival. So, I think there's a lot of this back and forth. But to the larger point, I think to set this in context, I think there's been a lot of activity. What comes out of it, we'll see later, but there's definitely a lot of activity to do with antitrust in the US in the last, let's say, a couple of years, but definitely accelerated in the last few months. So from the congressional report, the going after Google, couple of at least antitrust cases on Facebook. So I think the good folks at the Department of Justice Antitrust Division and the Federal Trade Commission are extremely busy. I mean, they're keeping themselves busy. We'll see what comes out of it.
Yeah, the good folks at DOJ and FTC have our support, or not.
I don't think so, but yeah, we are non-partisan and I don't know, whatever this is.
We just think they're good folks. Basically the thumb rule is, there's this market definition thing. Once you define a market, then you prove that the guy is dominant in the market, and then you prove that the dominance has been abused, right? And so I want to begin with the market definition itself, which I thought was extremely interesting, because the complaint basically says it defines the market in a way that the only player in that market is Facebook, okay? Like, this is the I imagine the narrowest market that I have seen in a while in an antitrust complaint. And like I have read full disclosure, I've read like 10 of these in the last 2 months. So the market basically says personal social networking services. And while I was reading this, like I kept having questions and I kept putting those in the comments. And every time I would have a question in the comment, the next paragraph would answer that. So basically the thing is, what does a personal social networking services mean? It means that you've got to have this thing, you've got to be based on this thing called a social graph. Because anytime you are likely to ask a Facebook employee on who their biggest competitor is, they're likely going to come up with this thing called TikTok. And like, well, I'm competing with TikTok. It's also this social network, so on and so forth. And like, so what this social graph thing does is, because TikTok isn't based on a social graph, what I mean by this is that you don't need to actually have friends on TikTok to use TikTok. For example, if you're on Facebook, then you're there because like on your social life there. So you're there to look at what your friends are doing. And TikTok isn't based on that same thing. So it essentially takes TikTok out of the conversation when you do that. And then there's a bunch of things around, should YouTube be in this definition? Should you have LinkedIn in this definition? And like the complaint, through its nuance or like through its clarity on what specifically the market is, it takes out YouTube, it takes out LinkedIn. I think it's a really well-written complaint, and I think all of you should use it.
Yeah, let's give credit where it's due. I think they've really thought through this particular aspect. And I'm happy to see that. Now, I will disagree with them, which is different, but I like the diligence that's gone in defining the market, because we know one thing we know for sure until now is that the biggest sticking point in any antitrust case will be the definition of the market, right? And that'll always be the most contested kind of part of the entire case, right? Because once you contest and probably win, in the way that the market is defined, then the rest of the case either falls through or can be held up. So it's very important to get this right, and I think at least they've taken the trouble to define it with a lot of nuance and so on. Right now, let's look at they provide three key elements that for defining this particular market. So the first one is, as you said, Rohan, is built on a social graph, which essentially means that it maps the connection between users and their friends, families, or any other personal connections, etc., where there's updates and other people are interested to know what you do, etc. Now, they've defined it this way about the social graph, as correctly as Rohan was saying, to exclude things like YouTube. Now, when I'm watching YouTube, there's no personal graph there. There's no personal connection between the person who's uploaded content and me who's a viewer of that content. So that's why they've maintained that there should be a social graph, which is a map of the different connections. Here, there's no such map, if you please. And so this, they say, is the backbone for all other features that Facebook offers. So that's an important kind of part. Second, they're saying that, users regularly employ to interact with personal connections and share their personal experiences in a kind of shared social space, right? So this is essentially what they're saying, is that there is a one-to-many kind of broadcast option. So this, I think a lot of other things will kind of qualify under this. But if you add one and two together, that there's broadcast, but only to, this social graph, then you'd see again a lot of other things falling off, and you'd have essentially Facebook pretty much as the last kind of option available. And I think third, which is important feature that they maintain, is that it allows for users to find and connect with other users, right? So it makes it easier for users to build their social network or expand their social network or the set of personal connections. So this is, and this adds to that social graph. So these are three key points that they've maintained, right? Now they go on to actually say why others are excluded from their market definition. So they very clearly mentioned that this would be different. So while there is some form of social graph in LinkedIn as well, but LinkedIn is a very specific kind of a feature, or it focuses on just the professional aspect, and therefore LinkedIn doesn't come into this entire aspect. Then they remove YouTube because, again, there's no social graph, A. And B, I think they say that, you're more of a passive user of YouTube. That is, you mainly, consume content on YouTube, but not many of the YouTube users are actually people who put out content, right? So therefore, that doesn't qualify, which is the second feature. You remember that they said that there has to be a, one-to-many kind of broadcast by all people involved in that network. I will argue against this because, you know, you can essentially what I do on Facebook, and I think there are many people around me who are not actually, you know, active users on Facebook at all. I think many people don't really put out content, even if it is a status update, but just, you know, use Facebook to look at other status updates, right? So you could kind of argue, but okay, that's a minor point in any case. So I think, so they've gone on to such an extent to narrow down the market definition that you would end up with just about one or two. I mean, I would think that probably Reddit come under this definition, Rohan, according to you?
Yeah, so that was my main takeaway. Reddit wasn't mentioned, but I imagine there's some sort of social graph that it's based on. I mean, if there was such a thing as interest graph, maybe, yeah. Would it be like Reddit could be a part of this.
Yeah, but under that section where they say that, you know, anything which is single purpose usage is not considered here, right? So, which is why they've taken down LinkedIn, because it's just professional. So they would say Reddit is just interest-based, and therefore, I don't know, I mean, I'm assuming if they want, they can really take it out.
No, I think it's harder to put the LinkedIn argument on Reddit. But the other thing is that even if Reddit were to be a part of this, you wouldn't honestly expect the FTC to believe that Facebook and Reddit are competing against each other and there's a fight to the death. Like, there's not.
Definitely not. But where does Twitter come in all of this?
They haven't mentioned Twitter as much, apart from Facebook calling that a threat. So you could put that in under the social graph, I think. But I'm not exactly sure. I think you'd need a lawyer to say something about this. But I still feel like Twitter and Reddit are both extremely small as compared to Facebook. So even if they were to be in with Instagram, WhatsApp and Facebook, I don't think they hold a candle to the market share that Facebook has.
Sure. But now let's go on to the other really interesting aspect of, you know, of what they exclude from this market definition, which is essentially, you know, your personal messaging services. So they are very clear that something like WhatsApp is not part of this kind of market, because that's, again, it's a smaller group that you're, even though, according to me, you're broadcasting, right? Even in WhatsApp, it's easier, especially now, given that there's so many groups, and groups are as important a feature of WhatsApp as individual messaging. But they say that it's still limited in terms of the reach, and therefore WhatsApp and so on does not come into this market definition. And they also use this very interesting analogy, right? Or metaphor, if you please, which is that Facebook is equivalent of this town square, going out and shouting in the town square versus WhatsApp, which is basically your living room, shared kind of living room. So what's your take on that? Do you think WhatsApp can... WhatsApp and what else would, you know, therefore be excluded? What about things like Snapchat or... I have no clue what the youngsters use these days, but, you know, would these be excluded?
So the messaging aspect is actually quite fascinating, how they've tackled this thing, because messaging is not actually, they try to exclude that, but at the same time, they make the argument that, well, Facebook bought WhatsApp. So then that's a problem. So you've got to be one side or the other. You can't be like Ajay Devgan with your feet on two separate motorcycles. So like, either messaging is part of stuff or it's not. Like, either way.
I don't get that reference at all. But WhatsApp is just an indicator, right? I mean, you could use any other as well. I mean, you could use Telegram or Signal, for instance. It doesn't matter whether you want to use WhatsApp. But okay, let's use Telegram, because it's what I mean is basically internet-based personal messaging service.
So they basically take it out of the equation when they say that you're looking at a social networking thing. So basically, the complaint actually has three legs, and they're as follows. Okay, they're saying that Facebook is anti-competitive because they acquired Instagram, they acquired WhatsApp, and then finally, because they've been anti-competitive with their usage of APIs, which means that they haven't let other companies do well. So, and I think there's an example of Vine that they've given there. So like, Vine was doing well and Facebook decided to cut off access to its APIs. And this was also applicable to this company called Circle, if I'm not wrong. So Circle was doing well and then Facebook decided to cut off access to APIs. And basically what happened is that Circle, which is growing at, I don't know, tens of thousands of users per X month or day or whatever, they basically dropped down to zero.
Right.
And you've got these emails from Facebook employees saying that they feel terrible for doing this. And they've actually, they sort of have this conscience thing going throughout the complaint, saying that I feel terrible because I'm doing this, or we shouldn't be doing this. And then because so they make you realize that Facebook actually knew at the time that the decision was wrong. But basically, I want to talk about all of these three complaints, right? All of these three problems that they have. So let's go with Instagram first, because I think that's the most well-known of the three.
Rohan, if I might stop you just for a second, right? Before you go on to the specifics of, you know, acquisition of Instagram and WhatsApp, why now? WhatsApp was acquired when? I mean, we're talking about multiple years ago. So was Instagram, right? And even some of these other decisions was also a long time back. Why is this all surfacing now? Is it because of, did it take this much time to investigate it? I don't think so, because it's not that some massively new information has come out. We knew that this acquisition happened. We knew the monetary value of that acquisition. We knew all of the other arguments they presented now, right?
I think there is a political angle to this, Anupam. That's why
I wanted to stay out of. Okay.
Yeah. So it's anyone's guess why now. And I think that's the argument. That's the first thing that Facebook's going to say. It's like, boss, it's been 8 years. We acquired Instagram. Get over it. Okay. Like you okayed it. And like my thing to that is that Facebook's basic argument is that if you can do that, I know that you disagree with this, Anupam, but Facebook basically is saying that if you retrospectively apply the law like this, then this is extremely anti-business. But like, to me, it's like saying this is anti-business to one person. Okay, like, and this is going to have massive effects for how the social networking space is going to develop. I don't know, like Benedict Evans has this whole case where he says that if you break up with the market with network effects will still exist. And so breaking up is not effective. Fine, I get all of that. But the fact that you will say that the US government is being anti-business, the American government out of all the entities in the world is being mean to this one person, I don't think it's a fair argument to make, because I feel like by any, if you look at Standard Oil, if you look at
it's an extremely fair argument to make. I'm terribly sorry about this, but it's an extremely fair argument to make. That's what a republic means, right? You can't say I will harm one person in the interest of the many. I mean, that is majoritarianism. I'm sorry that argument cannot hold, right? A republic means that there are laws, there are principles, and you know, there's a constitution, etc., 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 and everyone's rights is defended. So whether it's Facebook, I mean, I'm not at any point of time a big fan of Facebook, or I will not defend them. They're up to their necks with dirty deeds. But on this particular count, this is my main argument of why I think this is terrible timing, that all of this happened a long time ago. And at that point of time, every merger and acquisition still goes through the radar. I mean, the FTC has the mandate of approving, in some sense, or at least has the mandate to stop, you know, certain acquisitions and mergers based on competitive effects. They didn't do anything back then, because it's their fault. You can't compensate for your own fault by punishing someone now. You can't okay a particular act at some point and then go back and say, sorry, you shouldn't have done this, and now I'm going to break you up. That is just not the right way to do the laws. I mean, so again, as I, you know, the analogy that I've been speaking about today, if you decide that no one in India, and God forbid this should not happen, but, you know, no one in India should eat beef, you can't retrospectively go and harm every, or, you know, punish every person who's eaten beef until now, right? It can take place in effect from the time you're making the law. So in the future, you can prevent people, but you can't make such retrospective actions, right? So,
but I have 2 points to that.
Yeah.
Which is that, firstly, the Instagram order by FTC basically said that, listen, we might take retrospective action at this. Like, we've okayed this now, but there is a chance that this will come back. Okay, so there is that. And the second thing I have is that, by any measurable sense, take Standard Oil, take AT&T, take whatever. Like, none of those monopolies were actually as powerful as Facebook. Like, by any sense of measure, this has gone too far.
How? And tell me how. In what sense?
Because as a social network, I don't think people use anything else. I mean, and I live this, I stay this living in India where WhatsApp is all but pre-installed on my phone. Like, not only does Facebook have an immense power in America, it also holds immense power in the world through just WhatsApp.
Yeah, but AT&T was the single sole provider of telephone networks back then. So I think, I mean, I'm just taking, is Facebook powerful?
Not in the world.
Is Facebook powerful? Yes. Is WhatsApp powerful? Yes. Does it have that kind of market power? Yes. But I don't think you can say that it was no other company previously, no other monopoly previously even comes close to this. That I don't agree with. I mean, if you have the sole access to oil and you have a monopoly on that, then I think that's a far bigger deal than being a monopoly in the social networking space. I mean, it's just purely in terms of necessity of goods in a sense.
For sure. But AT&T controlled cellular in America.
Yeah.
WhatsApp controls communication across the world.
Sure. So they have a bigger geographical spread. I give you that. For sure.
So there is that. And like Facebook's going to say that, listen, it's been 8 years. Get over it, guys. And like, that's basically their main argument. The second one is WhatsApp. And like, I feel like it gets a bit tricky here, which is these guys are basically saying Facebook acquired WhatsApp because there are basically these transitions that Facebook went through. In 2004, Facebook started as a website. They wanted to go to mobile and they weren't doing well. So they went mobile through Instagram. And that's a problem. And then from mobile, they realized that now the next thing that's coming up is messaging. So they spun off Facebook into Messenger and Facebook. And the thing was, this Messenger thing is going to compete with WhatsApp. And like throughout this whole time, like I can hear like Zuckerberg in the background saying, if we don't build the thing that kills Facebook, someone else will build that thing. So we basically got to be on top of the game all the time. And so they basically go ahead with the strategy of it's better to buy than to compete. So they buy Instagram to get into mobile. They buy WhatsApp to get into messaging. And that's basically what the problem is here. Because at the time,
you've got to see this, right? For Facebook, yeah. And I know there are these supposedly damaging emails from Zuckerberg himself that FTC has gotten hold of and now is part of the report saying, yeah, we better buy than compete. But for a company, that makes absolute sense. I mean, Facebook is not wrong in thinking that. And it's better to buy and acquire than to compete. It is and was the duty of the FTC to stop it then. To say, no, better compete or you, but we won't allow you to buy it, right? Now, retrospectively, can't blame Facebook for saying, yeah, you bought. I mean, it makes obvious sense. If you can buy out a competitor, buy out a competitor, right? That's what everyone does. And I mean, I don't think that by itself is wrong. I mean, if you, as a regulator who's given the mandate to ensure competitive markets, if you couldn't stop it back then, if you couldn't even realize it back then, I'm sorry, I think the blame rests on you. So, for me, this entire order is the FTC compensating for its own errors. I very strongly maintain that.
Okay, so like I get that argument. I get that that's just how business is done. Like you basically, if you see a threat and you can acquire it, you go for it. Yes, but I still don't find it okay to say that there will be no consequences to your actions because things have, it's been like...
No, because there was no, it's not the 8 years point. There was no law that stopped them at that time from acquiring. I mean, that you've changed the approach towards competition, so therefore, from now on, I think, yeah, you'll have to remain vigilant. You'll have to look at all kinds of acquisitions. And we've talked about this before, right? Broaden the scope for review of mergers and acquisitions. Don't only look at revenue generated or don't only, because we know that a lot of these services are given for free. Don't only look at, end user kind of revenue generation, look at ads, look at the other things, look at data network effects, look at other network effects. I mean, there are ways to do this cleverly and you should start doing it cleverly. And this applies to India, by the way. The reason I'm so animated about this is it's time for India to, wake up and look at all of this now, then keep quiet, let things happen. And then 10 years down the line or 5 years down the line, suddenly wake up and say, no, I'm going to take retrospective action. Because that's terrible policy making. That is what will kill businesses and I end up harming consumers.
Okay, fair enough. I want to disagree, but I know that we're short on time and I really want to go on to this final point. So the final point here, and it's something that isn't raised often enough, is about Facebook's control over APIs. And the basic argument here is that, listen, Facebook has been extremely anti-competitive in the way it operates its API system, which means that if a company that's doing well using Facebook APIs, then Facebook basically says that if you're using our APIs, you can't be competing with us in the same space. Okay, that's a terms and condition thing you have to accept. And even if you are not competing with us in the same space, then if you start doing well, then we'll basically kill you.
Yeah.
That's the basic gist of argument. There's a bunch of case studies and a bunch of quotes in the study that you can go ahead and read. And I think it's fascinating. They did this to Vine, the company called Circle, and a few others. But like, I feel like this argument isn't made enough. And it's... It makes perfect sense. I mean, it's blatantly anti-competitive. I mean, but you could also make the argument if you're Facebook is that it's my API, I can do whatever the hell with it that I want. But I guess that doesn't apply when you're a monopoly in the space.
Right. Yeah. So this I think I completely agree on, which is... But this essentially comes down, according to me, to our old problem of vertical integration, right? Which is that because Facebook is a platform and you are allowing for a player on the platform to compete, and so then Facebook has that kind of gatekeeper function, right? It can suddenly shut off its APIs and so on. So for that, I think this is an absolutely fair complaint. Facebook is in the wrong here, according to all principles. And therefore, I think and I've been advocating this for a long time, right? About how do you ensure platform neutrality? So there are multiple ways to do this. I think some of our previous episodes will give ideas on this. But yes, I think platform neutrality is extremely important to maintain. And so Facebook can and should be, pulled up for this. Like Google has been in Europe and in the US, and I think even in India, essentially this is purely economic terms, this is the same thing as Google pushing its rivals' results on the third or fourth page, or Amazon kicking out its competitors from its platform, Apple charging an extra, higher commission fee to Spotify. All of these things are on the same kind of level, right? Which is a breach of platform neutrality.
Yeah, and they basically said, the FTC has basically said this has a bunch of harms for the consumer. And I feel like this is an interesting section to have, because generally you determine harm by price. But here they basically said the benefits that we are foregoing are additional innovation, quality improvements, consumer choice. And they also look at the advertising market, and they say that the harm that market's getting is that there's additional users to advertise to on there. There's lower advertising prices. We're foregoing additional innovation, we're foregoing quality improvements, and we're foregoing choice. Which, I tend to sort of agree with this, mainly because all of this is happening. They basically think that we could have had the next TikTok come out the US. Instead, it's come out of China. And that's sort of on you. That's a fair point, isn't it? Because, I don't know where the next social network is going to come out of, but it's likely not going to come out of the US, because anything that's remotely promising, Facebook will buy. And I feel like that's a fair argument to make.
Fair enough. But I think the important thing which to carry away from this is that there will be a next social networking giant, whether it's TikTok or whether it comes from the US or China or Japan or Eritrea or Somalia. It doesn't matter, but there will be one. And that's the important thing to kind of take away from this for me.
Another social network that you won't be on, Anupam, that you can choose to ignore. So that's excellent.
Exactly.
On that wonderful note, I think we are done. Thank you so much for listening in. And thanks, Anupam, for joining.
Thanks, Juan.
Please consider signing up for Takshashila's courses. Applications are now open and you can apply at www.takshashila.org.in/courses.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.